You made a mistake.
You don't want to do this.
Yeah, we do.
Hello, this is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. This is The Way Phase 4 is the name of the podcast because This is The Way Phase 4 gets discussed here. Today we're going over the fifth and penultimate episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, streaming now on Disney+. Any content Marvel Studios has released by the time the episode aired on April 16th, 2021 might be brought up during the discussion. So if you think that might affect your experience for shows, movies, even comic books, please save this podcast for later. You have been warned. If you want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard, send it to us. Email it to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. Interact with us on Twitter @thewayphase4 or visit facebook.com/thewayphase4. It's more fun when you join in on the discussion. There's no new feedback this week. I did hear a few different things that put together might mean something for the future of the Marvel Studios multiverse, though. A couple episodes back, we saw Madripoor and the Princess Bar, and I think I mentioned how comic book-wise, this was a place that Wolverine frequented. Well, last episode, we heard that the GRC is trying to fast-track the Patch Act. Separately, those two aren't related, except a little background. James Hallett is the name of the mutant that we all know as Wolverine. He took on the name Logan after his biological father, and that whole origin story is real sad and terrible. But so he's James, but he's also Logan. But then some miners gave him the name Wolverine, and that's how he got that name. Years later, he took on a secret identity. So he's James, Logan, Wolverine, and then he wore an eye patch in Madripoor and called himself Patch. And where he worked out of was the Princess Bar in Madripoor. So if we start hearing about a Police Chief Ty, Prince Baron, or General Coy in this show, it may be more than just a coincidence.
My name's Logan.
This week's episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is titled Truth and is said to be 61 minutes long, but from opening shot to credits, there's just under 53 minutes of showtime. The description in Disney Plus says, John Walker faces consequences for his actions, and Sam and Bucky return to the U.S.
You gotta give me the shield, man.
Where did we leave off, though? Sam and Bucky and Zemo tried to stay out of John Walker's way, but they didn't count on the Dora Milaje showing up for Zemo. He killed their king not too long ago, and though the new one, Chala, spared Zemo's life, the Dora Milaje don't like him tasting even a breath of freedom. The Flag Smashers gather to pay respects to someone they love, and Sam takes the lead in attempting to talk to Carly off her violent path, but John Walker won't let that fly, sticks his nose in at the wrong time, and sets off a chain of events that sees him seize power with an unsmashed vial of serum. He loses his best friend, Battlestar, in a brutal superpowered fight, and he goes viral thanks to smashing the life out of a defenseless Flag Smasher that the whole world is watching.
So that's what this is.
The Disney Plus snap splash screen is followed by parts of the scene where Zemo escapes the apartment in Latvia, and then there's a slate for a previously on segment that goes into scenes of Sam in Louisiana with his sister and nephews, Carly talking about the symbols of Captain America, Zemo talking about the Sokovia Memorial, Sam upset about Isaiah Bradley's cover-up, Sam telling Bucky he did what he thought was right when he gave up the shield, John Walker blowing a chance for Sam to talk to Carly, Walker asking Hoskins if he'd take the serum and discussion about what it does to a person, Carly punching and killing Lamar, the Flag Smashers running, and Walker killing Nico in the square at the end of last episode. And then we get the Marvel Studios title card sequence. The episode starts with Walker running from the scene, which a normal person might do, but a superhero certainly would not. It goes against character, though, because Walker has constantly acted in a manner that says he's proud of his choices, and he's almost too sure of himself. But maybe it's grief, along with losing, you know, his conscience in Lamar, and then maybe it's also what the super serum might be doing to him. It seems most likely, since when he stops in a warehouse of forklifts, he drops to his knees, and then we see shots of him remembering Lamar Hoskins talking to him. Bucky and Sam arrive. We don't know how long after he got there. He finally decides it's time to go to work, as Lamar would tell him, and he gets up, and he is not pleased to see the Falcon and the Winter Soldier are there. Walker is unrepentant. Bucky tries to reason with him. Sam tries to talk him down. and he mentions the shield, and Walker, you know, thinks something's up. It doesn't work. They fight for the shield. It's a decent fight sequence, similar in style to the one that Bucky and Steve Rogers had with Tony Stark at the end of Civil War. This fight is brutal in that Bucky uses his vibranium arm, but for a brief time gets knocked unconscious. Walker actually rips the wings off the Falcon, who had been using them, and his jetpack is there still and still works, and it helps him stay in the fight with a superpowered soldier. Walker doesn't want to give up the title of Captain America, and for him, that's wrapped up together with a shield. He fights so hard to keep it that his arm breaks at one point. Even superhumans can have their bones break. 3 minutes of fighting, and finally Bucky picks up the still-bloodied shield and drops it by Sam and walks off. Sam gets to his knees, tries to clean off the blood off the shield. He's very protective of his friend's legacy and the shield that it's left in. He's got a deep love for his country, sure, but that can be sullied by things he finds out, like the Isaiah Bradley stuff and what happened with the Sokovia Accords. His love for his friend Steve, though, who he saw give everything he could, is something that he can't see tarnished or bloodied. We get an episode title card with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier on it. And then we see police clearing out GRC camps while Sam basically tells us what's happening. He and Bucky are in the place that Sam tried talking down Carly before Walker intervened. And then when Sam's friend Torres comes in, Bucky leaves. Joaquin notices the broken wings on the floor, asks about them. Sam seems ready to be done with his time as the Falcon, I guess. Or maybe he's just preparing himself for taking over the mantle of Captain America. I don't know. Carly seems to have been driven underground by the confrontations that she's having. Sam, frustrated. Taurus tells him all they can do is wait.
Sometimes there's nothing to do until there's something to do.
That's bizarrely wise.
Sam decides to leave with S.H.I.E.L.D., but not the wings, and lets Taurus keep them. And as we may have mentioned in a previous podcast, Taurus ends up becoming the Falcon after Sam takes over the role as Captain America in the comic books. Next up is John Walker, appearing before some kind of committee that decides he should be stripped of rank and benefits. Which, for a 3-time Medal of Honor winner, I mean, that's... it makes the whole thing seem like it was a show, you know? And it is a show, but it takes me out of watching the show because they put on a big show to promote him, and now it seems like they're putting on a big show to tell him, you know, he's a bad guy. What he did was wrong. It absolutely, but I feel like it needs to be pointed out here. Nico is part of a terrorist group that killed people. That he didn't actually kill Lamar is not really the point here. He begged for mercy, but that doesn't really even matter to me that much. He was just in a fight where they would have killed John Walker. They would have killed him. That was the actual stated goal by Carly to Nico. So Nico knew that, and he went along with it. He's guilty. I'm going to go a step further and say his death was warranted. And yes, it does look bad. And yes, Steve Rogers would have detained him. You can't fire a weapon and then drop it right before someone else catches you and expect that everything's going to go well. Now, should Walker lose his standing as Captain America? Absolutely. Captain America does not do what Walker did. Should he be removed from the public eye? Absolutely. But should all his honors and his retirement and his life be upended? This was a combatant in a terrorist organization that might have ended up using his super strength when he was being detained or to get away. And if Walker had shown mercy, he might have tried to get away. So do I think he should have been brutalized? No, Walker was not right to kill him, but I don't think it was criminal. Nico wasn't innocent. The council seems to have authority over the military here. There's a senator, I guess, on the council. They even seem to be operating outside of a legal capacity since Walker isn't allowed to defend himself. But they say that it's not a court-martial. It's something that oddly kind of mirrors what happened to Isaiah Bradley. Now, Bradley was put into jail, so it's different. There's many, many ways that it's different. But he was also told to do something by superiors, did it. They didn't like the optics of it, so they make him the scapegoat. Isaiah Bradley, they didn't like what they told him to do something. He did it. honorably, and then they treated him poorly. Now, in this case, he's not able to be buried, perhaps only because they already made him a social media star before he even went viral for killing a flag smasher. I would imagine, though, that there are many, many stories similar in some respects to Walker's, where, you know, somebody does something at the behest of the United States government, but if they find out that you've done it, they have to distance themselves, right? He doesn't handle this well, just like he doesn't handle his role well. He says, you know, you built me. I am Captain America. And the senator tells him not anymore. He walks away from the council as they threaten him with jail and demand return of the shield, which really isn't theirs, right? It's Tony Stark's, if it's not Cap's, you know, because his dad made it. And Tony Stark is no longer with us. So Steve Rogers gave it to Sam. It's Sam's. And Sam donated it to a museum, not to the council. So if they took it out of the museum without his permission, then, you know, I think it reverts back to him. Walker and his wife are sitting outside the chambers where the council was tearing into him, talking about his next steps. His wife tells him to visit Lamar Hoskins' parents, like that's the next thing you should do. And then we're introduced to another comic book character, Agent 14. Not Agent 13, Sharon Carter, Agent 14.
Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. Actually, it's Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
I almost wish I could play the entire scene, because Julia Louis-Dreyfus kills it. She strokes John's ego and almost ignores his wife. Val.
Don't call me Val.
Excuse me. Valentina tells him what he wanted to hear and kind of says what I was saying earlier. If it hadn't been on camera, she says the group would have been happy to have one less flag smasher. And really, if he had killed all of them, he'd have been better off. And now that he's taken the serum, and she knows he did, he's very valuable to some people. This, though, is not what someone with mental problems like John needs to hear. Valentina gives John's wife what turns out to be a black and white piece of cardboard and tells John to not worry about the shield. She knows he doesn't have it, but the dirty little state secret is that the government doesn't own it, like I was saying before. She also tells him to pick up the phone whenever she calls him. But how would he know that she's calling? Because that business card she gave his wife?
There's nothing on it.
I'm really hoping this is an introduction for her character to the Marvel series. She doesn't have to be in everything or in heavy action or anything, but I would love to see Julia Louis-Dreyfus make some appearances, because we're missing the snarkiness of the Tony Stark character, and the way she comes off is just fantastic. Next up, though, we head to another camp, this one after a police raid. It's Carly and the Flag Smashers. Dovich reads a flyer left by the police that says the refugees were accused of harboring and abetting international fugitives, them, and so it was shut down. And that's exactly what happened. The people at that camp were doing that. That's why Carly went back there. And it's what was happening when the people were there. Carly talks about her friends that died and wonders how many of her people have to die to be considered citizens of the planet. It's really kind of ridiculous. Now, first, I don't know if it's overacting by the actress or the line she's reading, but Dovich and the other actor playing him is much better suited as a leader than she is. Carly doesn't have a cool head. She doesn't even make sense in her hyperbole. She may wish that things could go back to the way they were before. You know, she may be on Thanos' side here, but she's wrong and she's a child. She thinks that they should just have the right to everything post-snap. I mean, she's wrong. Now, they're entitled to something, and they do have a place in the world, but everything that we've been shown in the show shows me that they're not being treated really poorly. And I'm sorry, but all of her, oh, they had all these supplies. Well, you don't get all the supplies that you need all the time anywhere if you've been displaced. I'm sorry. That's just not how the world works. Those people who are coming back have a right to something. If they had nothing before the snap and then people came back, they're still better off going back to where they were than before it. And I'm sure the GRC is extremely corrupt. The people who got snapped didn't do anything to deserve being snapped. Coming back is just as stressful for them. Every time she has one of her little outbursts, the director and editor also make a choice to show the flag smashers reacting to her. And they're stoic to the point where it makes me think that the Flag Smashers are thinking to themselves that she's overreacting. Now, I understand there may have been plot points removed, dialogue removed, and the edits and line reads could be a result of that, but what is left is what I'm seeing, and Carly says the movement's ready and they're not going to stop until we make them, and it's time. One of the Flag Smashers even shakes his head no. Some of them say, "We're with you," or "Yeah," or express any emotion, and I think about this scene much differently, but that's not what happens. Dovich is the only well-rounded character, and that's because we see him shocked and upset that Carly killed the guards with an explosion. In his line reads, he does a good job of showing emotion. I know he's got lines that show emotion, but Nico did, and now he's gone. Matthias, I think, was the name. He was willing to die for his cause, you know. But that guy thought running at guys with guns on the tarmac as a super soldier was a smart thing to do, just to give Carly time. Why? The others may have names, but I don't think there's any reason to care. And it may be because of the plots removed, but I just think Carly is a terrible, terrible character.
I've lost count of how many others. How many times do we have to pay with our lives just to be citizens of this goddamn planet?
We head next to Sokovia and the memorial that Zemo mentioned a couple episodes back.
Don't suppose any of you bothered visiting the memorial. Of course not. Why would you?
Zemo's there paying respects, I guess? Bucky approaches. The chat's short. Zemo seems resigned to the thought that he's not going to get to finish his mission, but he tries making the case to Bucky that he needs to finish it by killing Carly. Bucky says they're going to do it their own way. Zemo says, "I was afraid you'd say that," but it's Bucky with the gun and the ability to make a threat. In fact, he readies the gun at Zemo's head. Zemo even nods to Bucky like, "Do what you got to do." Now remember, his family's gone. He just said earlier Bucky was literally programmed to kill. He thinks this is happening. Bucky pulls the trigger. Nothing happens. He took the bullets out. The Dora Milaje arrive to take Zemo. This time, Io says they're taking him to the Raft. That's the high-tech prison in the ocean that Thunderbolt Ross had Sam and the others in at the end of Civil War for a little bit. It would be interesting if Zemo was able to recruit people to his cause there. Io tells White Wolf it would be prudent if he was to make himself scarce for the time being in Wakanda. So he's got an open invitation to come back to their country. Before they can leave on their aircraft, the same kind that we saw in Black Panther movie, Bucky says he has another favor to ask. We head back to the States. Sam's walking down the street in Baltimore with the shield that's covered in a leather bag. Isaiah's grandson is playing basketball in the street with a friend, and Sam says he's going to see the old man. Elijah, the grandson's very protective of him. Sam finds Isaiah watering some plants. What proceeds is a really touchy conversation. Sam and Isaiah touch on a lot of subjects that I'm not really comfortable discussing, but I'm going to try. I may have valid thoughts, but I don't have experience. And I may be right in the way I think about this discussion, but being right doesn't always or really help in this situation. Black men, black people, have been treated terribly by just about every other race in this country for hundreds of years. Isaiah talks about his experience, and even though he's a character, he's a lens here for the viewers. He was treated awfully. Part of it was because he had super soldier serum. So, you know, part of it is just because of that and not because he's black. But he's also not able to separate that from being black because in his story, he was experimented on because he was black. There's a historical reference to the Tuskegee syphilis experiments. And Tuskegee gets name-dropped. That's how I know that that's what they were referring to. It's in reference to how the Red Tails were treated by Americans after fighting for their country and returning to the South where racism still reigned. Isaiah has every right to his bitterness.
If you ain't bitter, you're blind.
It was a hell for him. And even if there were some people of other races who supported him, the majority that he personally encountered failed him as human beings. He explains his life to Sam because he was, as he says, erased. He was a successful recipient of the Super Soldier Serum, and one time he fought for the country, except he wasn't the only one. Others also had the serum, and he relates a time where several of them had been captured. He got wind that the government was going to wipe them all out by hitting the POW camp to erase the evidence. He tells of his historic rescue mission that was met not with congratulations, but incarceration. A rescue that we saw Steve Rogers perform in the first Avengers movie, and he was celebrated for it. Now, Isaiah was locked away. Not really even because he did anything wrong. I mean, he disobeyed orders, but that's not a 30-year sentence. It was because he was all right. He was a successful test of the serum that scientists had been studying for years, and they took his blood for over 30 years. They also just didn't want a black super soldier becoming a hero at that time. Who is they? Well, it's someone. A few people in power. It doesn't matter who it was. The ones who had the most power and could have done something didn't do anything. Like Valentina told John earlier, the ties in the room had something to protect. You know, she was making rubbing her fingers together like nutty. It was themselves and their interests that they wanted to protect. Now, it could be argued that this would have happened if Isaiah had been Chinese, Indian, Jewish, Caribbean, or just an ordinary white man that lived through the serum test. And you could say, yeah, well, I mean, it would have happened if he was a white guy. The problem is, though, it can't be separated from the fact that the superiors were counting on the fact that he wasn't important, almost certainly because of his race. And Sam doesn't understand. Sam's from the South and undoubtedly came across an enormous share of racism. The issue is, though, that Isaiah did all this in the 50s. Isaiah could not help but see the struggle others were going through. And despite his power with the super soldier serum, he was powerless to help. Sam starts to say he could have been the next Captain America, but Isaiah stops him, saying, the next what? He tries to explain, no one was going to let a black man take over the role from a blonde-haired, blue-eyed poster boy. And at that time, he was right. Sam points out that Steve had nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter to Isaiah. He's been wronged, and he doesn't want to forgive. It's a little like Bucky. You know, Bucky was searching for forgiveness. Isaiah does not want to give forgiveness. I thought when I first started watching the scene that I was going to hate it. I really did. I don't like being preached to. And as someone who is most definitely not racist, I think the media, and yes, Disney, does preach way too much. I think the writing here must have just been better. Because when I thought about what I was seeing, I wasn't reacting like, oh, here we go again. I'm seeing Sam once again prove his worthiness. Remember, Tony Stark often called Steve Rogers a Boy Scout because of how optimistic he was, and often he would see the good in people even when there was very little good to be had. Sam's being tested here. Here is a horror story in front of him, a tale of what might happen to him. The worst kind of things that might happen to him simply because of the color of his skin. So this scene is important because Sam is grappling with reconciling his love for his country, his love for Steve, love for his family, love for his friends, with a large portion of the public that's not going to accept him. It's the truth. Sam wants to tell people, he says, times are different, and he knows people. Isaiah is incredulous. He tells Sam they will never let a black man be Captain America.
And even if they did, no self-respecting black man would ever want to be.
So Isaiah is clearly a pessimist. Whether he has reasons or not, he's a pessimist here. And again, he's got reasons. For Sam to be worthy, though, he has to rise above this. It's not petty. It's horrible. It's true. Sam is being told to his face by a war hero that he's not respectable if he accepts the mantle of Captain America. So far, we have only heard Steve Rogers and Bucky support Sam. So before we judge the show for trying to preach, let's allow ourselves the possibility that this is another test for Sam, one that will once again prove that he is worthy. At least that's what I'm hoping.
I'm coming home.
So Sam returns home to Louisiana. Now that he's back, I guess he's decided it's safe for them to return home. Remember, he told Sarah to leave and take the kids last episode and pay cash. Well, he's back, and he finds out Sarah couldn't sell the boat even if she wanted to. So Sam has a new mission now. He knows that the boat is going to stay in the family, but this mission, and a mission, is what he excels at, right? Now that he's got one, he comes up with a plan. He's going to call in every favor his family ever earned through their goodwill over the years. He starts calling people, and lo and behold, they show up. Sam's optimism is rewarded. It's a Wonderful Life-style gathering of people, black and white, showing up at the dock with stuff to fix the boat. One of the people, though, is superpowered. Bucky shows up, and he's got a favor, or his favor, from the Wakandans with him. Before Sam and he can talk much, though, a pipe starts leaking. Sarah says hi to Bucky before he helps stop the leak. Sam shows he's well-adjusted because when he's offered help by Bucky, he takes it without pretending he doesn't want or need it. And Bucky also introduces himself a little better to Sam's sister. We get a, you know, fix the boat montage, but, you know, don't talk to my sister also. It ends with Bucky and Sam discussing whether Carly is going to stop and how to stop her. And then Bucky hints he needs a place to stay. Sam convinces him to stay with them for one night on one condition.
But don't flirt with my sister. Because if you do, I'll have Carlos cut you up and feed you to the fish.
Okay.
We get a short scene with John Walker at the Hoskins family flower shop. He's explaining that he killed Lamar's killer, but that's a lie. Like Lamar did, they speak glowingly to John. It's clear that they were best friends from their time serving. The scene's tough because of how much love and support even Lamar's mom and dad are giving him. Not his sister, though, but even though it was really John's failure to listen to Lamar that basically got Lamar killed, it might not have been his sister, it might have been his wife, who knows, but Lamar was always the voice of reason. And we see the seeds of John going to a dark place here. The scene then shifts to Sharon Carter's place in Madripoor. She's hiring someone over the phone for some kind of job. The captioning tells us who it is, but she doesn't say it, so I'll hold that reveal, even though it's got far-reaching implications. She offers double what she did the first job, so this person is somebody she's hired before. And then we head back to Louisiana, where someone pointed out, and I missed it, but Bucky's not sleeping on the floor. He is clearly more comfortable with Sam's family than alone. He wakes to Sam's nephews playing with the shield, but he doesn't get mad. He actually smiles a little bit before we switch to a weird slow motion walk and then him heading to the boat to help Sam with the boat engine. I feel like this is another place where they had to cut something out. Another weird scene, doesn't seem to be there for any other reason than to give Sam and Bucky an excuse to not work on the boat anymore. Sarah tells them to stop working on the water pump, and then we see the shield embed itself in a tree. It's shield toss practice time. We get to see Sam throwing the shield at padded trees so that it bounces back at him, with Bucky also throwing and catching. They're having a real discussion this time about the legacy of the shield. Bucky's honest with him that he and Steve discussed who should take it up, but naively they didn't consider the ramifications. It may be because they're honest, good people, but that still puts Sam in a tough position. And Bucky apologizes. It's obvious that Bucky and Steve are not, nor probably ever were, racists. But pretending that's how the world around them works wasn't helpful. And Bucky goes on, and better than any therapy session he's had, he makes himself vulnerable to Sam, explaining that the shield feels like part of his family. And when Sam retired it, he felt like he had nothing. Sam is familiar hearing stories from servicemen like that in the role that we saw him in at the beginning of Winter Soldier. He's receptive, he shows understanding, and he's a great listener. He also lays down hard truths, but at the right times. He has that experience, knowing not just what to say, but how to say it, and then when to say it so it sinks in.
You gotta stop looking to other people to tell you who you are.
He tells Bucky to do the work to climb out of his own personal hell. Bucky says he's been making amends. Sam points out it was more like avenging. He says, pick one name and bring them closure instead of trying to make himself feel better.
Start with one.
This is what Bucky has needed since Steve left. Sam's not just stepping into the role Steve left as Captain America, but Bucky sees him as the friend who can talk trash to him like Steve did.
Don't do anything stupid until I get back.
How can I? Taking all the stupid with you.
Bucky vows to be there when Sam calls with a lead on Carly, and then he leaves. Sam goes back to working on the boat, gets more affirmation from his sister, his family, that he's worthy. She points out that he's fought every battle valiantly, the obvious ones and the ones that aren't so obvious, and she's been proud of him. he doesn't have Steve or his parents left to tell him that, so this is what Sarah's doing. Sarah then pointedly asks whether he's going to let Isaiah Bradley's words to him decide his future. Then Sam says the line I think that sums up my points earlier about Sam being worthy and Isaiah just being one of the last tests.
What would be the point of all the pain and sacrifice if I wasn't willing to stand up and keep fighting?
It's all right there. He's not just right, he's paraphrasing Steve.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
I can do this all day.
Sam then takes his own advice to Bucky to heart, and he does the work. We get a SHIELD training and running montage where he even gets to tell his nephews all day. Although it might have been funnier if instead of him passing them on his right during his run around the house, that maybe he could have done it on his left. That would have been a little bit more funny. The scene ends with his nephew being proud and impressed with the shield, which is exactly what Sam wants. For people to be proud of it, not shamed by it, like Isaiah feels. Sam needs to feel like he's never good enough for it so that he can continuously live up to that ideal. Because I think that's kind of how Steve operated. And as long as he can get into that groove where he always feels like he needs to live up to it, he's going to make the right kinds of decisions and choices. The scene cuts to a couple of park benches where Carly and Dovich are waiting for someone who says that they've been dying for payback on Sam. It's Batroc, the man who we saw at the very beginning of the first episode of the show, leading the mission to capture that Captain Vasant guy. Remember, Sam ruined Batroc's payday. Why did Batroc show up? Batroc, whatever his name is. He's the one Sharon Carter hired. He's got weapons and tech for the Flag Smashers to use, but when Carly reveals her plan to stop the GRC vote, Georges Batroc says he's not interested in the politics, just killing the Falcon. She tells him he'll get his chance, and she does a little whistle to the people that she alerted moments before with her cell phone, and they all activate. Back in Louisiana, Sam is watching the news, and the GRC vote in New York is mentioned. Joaquin Torres calls because he was able to figure out that there were alerts that went out just before the attacks by the Flag Smashers all over Europe. But one just happened in New York. He's not sure if there's a connection, but Sam was just watching the news, and he's sure that Carly's going to do something. We then see the GRC conference room. It's the night before the vote, and the discussion is contentious. The head of the meeting is also the man who introduced John Walker as Captain America. He stripped Walker of the title earlier in the episode, not to mention he thanked Sam for giving up the shield in the first episode. He makes the case there's no need for a vote. Not very democratic. Very little concern shown for the actual people that are being affected, except for how it would look to others. That's when one of the people we saw alerted in the park by Carly use a key card and whisper "One world, one people" to another security guard. And then the lights go out and it's red alert time with some world leaders now in lockdown. And they're clearly unsafe in this conference room in New York. The last scene is back in Louisiana again, and finally Sam's going to open the case that Bucky left. And though we don't see it, I have to believe that it's Captain America-themed gear. Whether it's vibranium wings, or maybe even an Iron Man-styled suit of armor for him since he's not superpowered, his face seems to show that he likes whatever's in that box. Though it's the last scene before the credits start, though, there's one more scene. And it starts with hammering. It's not Tony Stark. It's John Walker creating a shield. So he's gone off the deep end. He's even using his medals of honor and painting the shield red, white, and blue. This guy is a problem. 5 episodes in, just one left. It feels like all these shows are going to be one-offs. You know, like WandaVision, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki. I mean, it's admirable, but it's also kind of scary for them. We may never get to be attached to the shows. We may just drift between the first seasons of new shows, which is a little bit exciting as well. It's like a limited comic run with episodes instead of issues. I get the impression that Walker is actually going to die a hero and not move on to another show, you know, despite taking the serum. Now, he may not. He may end up in the raft, but I don't feel like he's the kind of character that lives on and then becomes a problem later. It might be a better story end for him if he makes himself a sacrifice than instead of a supervillain. Or maybe he accepts some role from the power broker where we don't really see him again, but we know that he's supposed to be working that way. Speaking of, it looks more and more like Sharon Carter is all in on this criminal underworld. So if she's not a bad guy now, it would be nice to see a little confirmation of it before we leave the show. But instead, we're only being shown that she's really kind of shady. I wouldn't think we'd be leaving this way with her character. I'd like to think we'd get some resolution. I think Bucky's friend from the first episode is going to finally get some. I think that's the one who's going to give closure, you know, telling him that as the Winter Soldier, he killed his son while on a mission. I don't know that we need to see that happen. Maybe that's how we leave Bucky, like him knocking at the door of Yuri. I think we won't see any more of Isaiah. But Elijah does end up becoming a new Avenger in the comic books. I wonder how long Marvel Studios will wait to announce something on that kind of show. Maybe it has to wait until after the Hawkeye series. Now, one thing, I hope we don't see any more of Carly. It might be nice for the Flag Smashers to abandon her before they're caught or hurt and somehow work for good, maybe put those serum doses to use for good. I like Dovich. I think the actor that plays him is doing a great job, and I don't like Carly. And I think the little we've seen her do is less than remarkable. First, she was Enfys Nest in Solo, and now here as Carly Morgenthau, I think she's terrible. I really hope this is the last we see of her character. I know Disney probably likes her because she fits some of their politics. I just think she's not good. I'd like to see Joaquin as the new Falcon. I had a terrible thought, though, that maybe Batroc kills Joaquin, thinking that he's going after Sam if Joaquin becomes the new Falcon. And that would really be an unfortunate use of his character if that happened, but maybe that's all they've got for him. I do want to see more of Bucky, though, and maybe we end up seeing him in Black Panther 2 if he's taking another sabbatical there at the prodding of Io. After this is all done, of course. I mean, he's still got work to do in New York. I also want to see Sam in action as Captain America or as whatever he becomes, because waiting for another movie would just take way too long. Unless Captain America is going to appear as a side character in one of the announced movies or series that's already been announced through November of 2023. But I hope they give this new Cap or whatever character more than just side character roles. What do you think? This is when I ask you to email us. This is thewayphase4@gmail.com. Interact on Twitter @thewayphase4. Episode 5, like the others, was directed by Kerry Scoglin. Dallin Mossan wrote this episode. The season finale, episode 6, set to air this week on Disney Plus, Friday, April 23rd. This has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Truth, season 1, episode 5 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.